discussion on the big topics in sports. This is Riddle and the Reporter with Junie Riddle and Nick Keyser on Nashville's best sports talk, 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Welcome into Riddle and the Reporter, the second official episode of this pairing. Junie Riddle, Nick Keyser, Nick Frazier in behind the glass in the producing chair. But this is the first time we get to hear our first little intro. Chase McKay, appreciate the update. No longer Michelle and Junie, it is now officially Riddle and the Reporter. Happy weekend, guys. Saturday morning. It's good to be here.
Happy weekend. Yes. And, you know, it's good to be here. I know it's a rainy day outside, but it's going to be a good day, and I'm looking forward to having a good weekend and just relaxing and more or less just taking in anything that we possibly can during this time of the summer for sports, because it is a little bit more difficult to take in things, Junie.
Yeah.
But you soak in anything like you can, like a sponge right now.
It is definitely the dead period, but that is why we all have each other. You know, baseball season, soccer season. Frazier had an eventful night at Nashville SC the other night. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But, Nick, how are we doing?
Doing well. Another day, another dollar, as they say, in this crazy world we live in. So, yes, another day, another dollar on this rainy Saturday in Nashville.
Absolutely. So, you know, Keyser, you brought it up, man. It's that time of year where sports are really just not that prevalent. We're in that odd time of the year. You know, the NHL draft was a few weeks ago, so was free agency, and we're kind of like past that, and we haven't gotten to Titans training camp yet, so it's like, what is there to talk about? Well, there have been a few stories this week that we're going to get into, and I figured that we would start with the negative on the show this morning. So, you know, there is an arrest in the NHL. Alex Galchenyuk, we're going to get into that. Jeremy Pruitt's sanctions against the Tennessee Vols and their football program. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But we're going to lead off with probably the worst news story of the summer, maybe the year so
undoubtedly
far in sports. I remember reading this earlier this week when all of this kind of came out. In the Northwestern football program with Coach Pat Fitzgerald, in all of the hazing allegations that have gone on there, and also to kind of go with that, the baseball coach, Jim Foster, also getting fired for cultural reasons as well. I don't necessarily know if they got into specifics on that. I just saw that headline yesterday, but wow, what a week for Northwestern sports.
Look, I think just hearing about this all week, it's obviously not a good story. It's still something to talk about over the course of the summertime. And what's more or less interesting to me is we're starting to see a trend, maybe across the country, possibly, where teams are being outed for their type of culture that they have. And Northwestern is no exception to this, and especially all their programs, I'm sure, are being heavily evaluated by their AD, as they should, because after what went down with the football team and just even the earliest reports that have come out, you know, you and I talked about last week that it's not official yet, court of law, we need to figure out some more details. That's very important to consider. However, when you have Jim Foster being fired as your head baseball coach right after Pat Fitzgerald is relieved of his duties as well, that does not look good. And so there's not, and like you just said, and I just looked it up too, there's no details behind Foster's termination on the baseball side as of yet. So there are a lot of factors considered there, but also for Fitzgerald too, that are slowly starting to come out now.
And to me, what's scary is number one, the fact that he only got like the 2-week suspension right now before the team even goes into like their camp period before the season. And if the details were the same, because I really don't think that much more came out, you know, after the fact. I think it was more of a reaction-based firing, and that they had enough that they could do it. And I think because of public perception, that is what led Northwestern to do that. And that bothers me. And, yeah. And that's one. And number two, when you look at, you know, Jim Foster being included in this, the baseball coach, you look at this, and what's even scarier than it being just a football issue is it being a Northwestern athletics issue.
It is, because also, so this is according to NPR with reporting from the Chicago Tribune and 670 The Score, who we'll toss to a clip to in actually just a second here. But so it was reported that Foster allegedly led a toxic culture within the baseball program, as his alleged bullying and verbally abusive behavior led to a human resources investigation by the university. So look, if they have found some of this already and it's been really, really early, then you've got some problems. And it says later that they were racist statements and discouraged players from reporting their own injuries. So that's a big, big no-no. And wow, just everything that's coming out of there right now, like, I don't know if it's – I almost – like, I bring up the AD. The AD has to be held accountable at some point, because wasn't it the president that officially fired their football coach?
Yes.
Yeah, so
yes. – So typically when it's something as systemic as this that's going on throughout the athletic program, not even just for you know, just the program in general for football, but the fact that this is leaking over into baseball has to cause some concern as well. But let's go over. We had David Haugh on the station earlier this week from 670 The Score. He had some comments on Pat Fitzgerald in particular and how the program is feeling.
Yeah, I've said all week that Pat Fitzgerald wasn't the symbol of Northwestern football. Pat Fitzgerald was Northwestern football. So there's no question that over 17 years, he had a tremendously loyal following, not just his players, but his fan base. That said, I think that you accurately described the details by calling them horrifying. And I think that they were so hard to conceive for people, like, what in the world is going on? The descriptions of, you know, naked sexual hazing that is just gone across so many lines, that this wasn't – it was easy to understand once you looked at it from that context and through that prism, that this wasn't a university firing a coach because he couldn't manage a clock or because he lost more games than he won and he deserved the benefit of the doubt. This was a university taking a stand against type hazing that should never exist in any locker room at any level. And when you see the nature of the allegations and you realize that, you know, there are some people that are arguing correctly that this falls under the category of criminal behavior, then I think that you can't make an argument, or it's more difficult to understand an argument that he deserved to keep his job. I don't think that that had much ground to stand on.
Again, that was David Haugh from 670, The Score up there in Chicago. And I will put it to you this way, Nick. If these allegations are true, you know, the naked hazing, the sexually exploitation of young freshmen, making them do things that they're obviously uncomfortable with, I do believe that that causes for legal ramifications. If it does come out that all that these things are true, which it is looking more and more like they are, the fact that the university itself, you know, went and made such a, you know, rash decision in going and getting him out of there as soon as they possibly could. But I genuinely believe, like, if this was going on in the program and the head coach has to know about it, like, if this is going on in the locker room, if this is going on outside of the locker room, that's one thing. But the fact that this is going on in the locker room and there was things reportedly that were on the board that were insinuated to alluding to this and silent messaging and terminology such as running and showers and stuff like that, like, that's just – it's just flat-out disgusting, and it's sexual abuse of college athletes. And I wouldn't say it's to the level of Jerry Sandusky, but it's got to be, like, the tier right below it.
Oh, 100%. And but also, too, the immediate thought that I had, Junie, after all of this came out was, who did the Titans just draft? You know?
Yep.
Who did they just draft? First-round pick,
Peter Skoronski.
And what kind of culture was he a part of? And you would – it would be safe to assume, at least, that he was part of what this locker room was like, and that is probably a very fair statement to make, is you are around a group of individuals, including what you maybe even established the last couple of years of college for you, And so I'm not saying I'm concerned about what he's doing, because like he's away from that now. Like he's here. He's been in Tennessee for a couple months, I'm assuming. I don't know how if he's gone back there whatsoever. But what matters now is that he is a professional. He's here with the Titans. That is the most important thing, is that he is here. But I mean, it just leaves so many more questions.
It does.
So many more.
It does. But it's hard, I feel, for players in that situation. And you always want your guy to be the righteous one. You always want them to step up and say something and put this to a stop. But when you're in a big group, and especially for college football programs where it's not just a 53-man roster, you're talking about, in some programs, up to 100 kids on the team, you know, when there is such a profound, you know, history, because I don't think that this happened, you know, because of, you know, Peter Skoronski, like, being there. I think that this has happened over a long period of time, passed down from one class to another class, because in order for it to get to this point, it had to start and build and to grow. And so for me, I think that probably Peter Skoronski fell victim to some of this. And it's hard to put yourself in that situation. You know, for me, like, I was in a fraternity. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm very happy because my fraternity did not, like, was founded upon not hazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the things that you could constitute as hazing and that people reference now, like, for instance, you know, in college, you're not allowed to, like, make, you know, freshmen and stuff like that, like, drive and clean.
Yeah, like, do things.
But, like,
those are
that's, like, a different standard than this. You know, when it's one thing and, you know, you classify something as hazing, and it's really kind of like poking fun and teasing and, you know, kind of more of less like team building exercises, that's one thing. And that can build camaraderie within a group. But when you're doing this and forcing players like this, this is just mentally degrading.
Oh, it is.
And emotionally traumatic.
And also, too, you have to think, too, this spreads pretty quickly. Like, I don't care how big the locker room is or how small it is. Actually, if it was smaller, it would be a lot worse. But look, this is a big group of guys, and regardless of where they were, whatever was going on, different isolated activities, I'm sure, took place.
But think about what's on the line.
But exactly, too. Yeah, it's on the line, but like, things are going to be spread out. You, like, I remember being in my locker room playing high school sports and being around other ones in college covering teams.
Yeah.
Word catches pretty quickly with what is going on, with someone saying something or whatever it is. You don't have to be someone's friend to hear about what's going on or what they said about so-and-so during practice or so. Like, it really does not matter. This does not look good for Northwestern, Junie, and it's only going to escalate from here. So as more things come out, I'm sure that we'll get some clarity on that. But man, oh man, it's a mess over there right now.
Well, the player that came out with these allegations said that there's essentially no way that Pat Fitzgerald didn't know, and that's what really, really bothers me about all of this, mm-hmm. is that him knowingly allowing this to go on. And I feel like it's hard for players, but even players that aren't necessarily freshmen anymore, like upperclassmen, mm-hmm. you know. Do you really want to be the guy that loses out on your opportunity to play Division I football in the Big Ten,
right,
by being the one to speak out? Like, it's hard. They're, like, these guys' futures are on the line. And this is a point that I haven't heard. I genuinely think, because of the way that college football has transitioned to where that you're not stuck in one place and it's so hard to move from one place to another, I think the fact that players now have options to be able to leave a program that they dislike, that had to have had something to do with this getting leaked out. Because for me, the way that it all sounds, this has been going on for years. This has been something that the Northwestern community has kind of known about and kept on hush hush for those who have caught wind of it. I think player movement in college football has to have something to do with
absolutely.
How this came out.
Absolutely. And there's going to be repercussions for a long time. And kids that are currently being recruited or are recruits, committed, whatever it is, you are affiliated with this now, whether you like it or not. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing whatsoever, because it's a horrible thing. So you may see a really big struggle, not just in the football department, Junie, but I think the whole school in general. And they didn't have a very good season last year either on the gridiron. And so it's going to be tough for them to rebound from this. And man, I truly do feel for how this is going to go for them. But at the same breath, I have to say they may get what is deserved after everything that comes out. So
I definitely think there's going to be a lot more punishment. Like, I remember when Louisville got hit with the stripper scandal that was going on with the basketball program in recruiting and that. And they got rid of not only Rick Pitino, but Tom Jurich, who was an awesome athletic director. So I think there's definitely more that's going to come out of this investigation, especially with all the pressure that there is to release some of the details. But – you know, I kind of want to move past this story. This stuff is tough to talk about, but you know, like I said, we're gonna start the show off with some tough stories. We got another tough story coming out of the NHL. Some really gruesome details about of arrest of a guy that was a free agent that just got signed by the Arizona Coyotes. We're gonna get into that next and what he did when he was getting arrested for a DUI and destruction of property. You listen to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
Galchenyuk's third stint with the Coyotes lasted all but 12 days. The team working to void his contract after he was arrested on multiple charges. Scottsdale PD confirming to 12 Sports that Galchenyuk was arrested on July 9th. Charges include private property hit and run, disorderly conduct, failure to obey, resisting arrest, and threatening or intimidating. Police say no one was hurt. The 29-year-old was just signed on a one-year deal. He was the third overall pick by Montreal in 2012, but has played for six different teams since 2018.
That was the local, was it NBC outlet in Phoenix, talking about Alex Galchenyuk getting arrested. He was part of, you just mentioned it to me, and I completely forgot about this because I knew that he signed with the Arizona Coyotes, but he was the guy that was a part of the Ryan Johansson trade.
Yes, he
basically
was.
Basically a cap dump for the Nashville Predators to get the Ryan Johansson contract off. And then he ended up signing with the Arizona Coyotes on July 1st in free agency, which did not last very long, his third stint with the team after being, like the report had just said,
the third
overall pick of the Montreal Canadiens in 2012. So some gruesome details about this. It wasn't just necessarily the fact that he got arrested, but it was really what he was saying to the police officer and the threatening things that he said. Galchenyuk was cited in connections to Moscow, so he was basically threatened, saying that he has Russian connections to incite violence. And he said this to the police officer. He says, "I'm going to chop you, your wife, and your daughter up on a phone call, and you're all dead, your whole family, your bloodline is dead." That was what he was saying to a police officer. Also, and on the report that I'm reading, said that he threw out a bunch of racial slurs at the police officer as well. Some sickening stuff here, Nick. And you said you did a deep dive on this guy and just didn't find much about him.
No, there really wasn't. And just to refresh our listeners here on Saturday morning, so he was part of the Ryan Johansson trade. Like Junie said, it was a cap dump. And basically what the Predators saw there, the only affiliation that there truly needs to be with a Galchenyuk in this situation now is he was just a pawn in a move where the Predators decided they didn't want Johansson on their team anymore. So just leave it at that. The only affiliation I think the Preds would like to have with him is they were moving away from one player, going off to the next one. Now we have Ryan O'Reilly here, which we'll get into in just a minute. But this is a very, very important story because, look, the Coyotes, they knew what they were going to get from him, and they didn't know that they were going to get this situation whatsoever. They're really, like, I never saw anything from him off the ice or on the ice even that warranted this kind of behavior. And so I'm not sure where he is at as a person. I understand it's been very hard for him the last couple of seasons. He had to sign a PTO last season just in order to even play hockey. He tried out with the Avalanche, and right after he tried out, he signed a one-year deal. He plays in the AHL. He plays okay there. He plays a couple of games in Colorado, didn't do anything there. He's a former third overall selection, and that draft class was one hell of a draft class, by the way, too. He's I would say among the top 10 players, he was originally one of the better ones. And I initially did not see anything else really going on. And so, look, just the fact that just on that quote, just him saying, I'm going to chop you, your wife, your daughter, and one phone call and you're all dead. Like he's got something going on, and I'm not sure what he was up to during this time. I'm not going to assume anything in this situation, but he was on private property when he was arrested. He was, you know, just destroying things or doing something. I don't know if he was driving over things or hitting things.
So the details in the police report kind of state that he had hit something on private property. I assume it's like maybe like a mailbox or something. Either way, he was outside of his car, and when police were, you know, showed up on the scene, that he hopped into a different vehicle trying to get away, trying to escape the scene. So he got charged with that destruction of property, trying to evade the scene, and obviously doing threatening things to a police officer. Just absolutely disgusting stuff. So, you know, this is the time of year, you know, where this is not the time of the year for athletes to be getting in trouble, because all eyes are going to be on you. So some tough stuff. But we actually got a caller. Stan wants to make a comment about the Northwestern controversy that we got into in the first segment. Go ahead, Stan.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So, I work for a national sports organization, and every year we've got to go through, from a coaching perspective, hours and hours of training with regard to recognizing hazing and bullying and abuse and grooming and all of these things that you hear, you know, going the wrong way with in some situations, like at Northwestern. So either the head coach went through that curriculum and decided to ignore it, or he didn't go through it, in which case the university or the athletic department is liable. I'm not sure which it is, but do not know that that's going on, since that's in your face every day in the news is absolutely ridiculous. And if he ever says it again, I'll just continue to not believe him. So that is absurd. And if he didn't literally know it was going on, then he's got to be the dumbest guy in coaching history.
Appreciate the call, Stan. That was some good insight there. He's right, Keezer. I mean, the fact that he had to know that this was going down and didn't do anything about it, I mean, it pains me for the players. It pains me for the Northwestern program. And for me, when it comes to hazing like that and using the vulnerability of these young men in their minds trying to kind of grow up and adapt on their own, I really do think that if this comes out to be true, that – he should be charged legally what he allowed to go in his program.
He absolutely should. And this is only going to get worse for him. And I know that he is trying to keep his job through all of this too, which after some point in time, it may not even feel worth it to keep your job. So I think when you are going through moments of reflection, maybe for him during this time, he's going to have to realize the magnitude of this, which I'm sure maybe he has. But I think up until now, all we know is that he'd like his job back and they're investigating. And so from that perspective, you have to go, all right, well, if this is all true and I'm busted for it, I mean, he's pretty much just done coaching. There would be no other way just to go about it. He has a big legacy. He's one of the most renowned faces at that college.
Oh, yeah.
And so your legacy is out the window. Like, you'll be remembered, sure, for some of the great things that you did as a player and as a coach. But when you have this much trust, that really shows me, too, that he just got comfortable, maybe. And he just got so complacent with what his team was like, what the culture was like, what the players were like that he was bringing in. You need to pride yourself on bringing in good people. And if he's not doing that, and if he's not helping develop these young men, because what's more important to me, Junie, is developing men for this country and developing good men for their families at some point in time. That's what matters more to me. And that is something I will always go back to. And I don't care what sport it is or what situation it is. Even for Haskins, too. Like, you have to make sure that you are a good man, but it's about what you've done, and that's what gets spotlighted, and that's the unfortunate part of all of this. So
615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can call or text us if you want to make a comment about some of these stories, because obviously, like, this is a time of year where all the focus is on things that are outside of what's on the court, the field, the ice. And the stories coming out with Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern and Galchenyuk getting released from the Arizona Coyotes after his arrest. There's just some of the awful stories that come out around this time of year, just simply because, you know, there's nothing else to distract us. And, you know, these are tough things to digest. But I think Galchenyuk getting arrested, he's getting his. Fitzgerald getting fired, he's getting his, and I think there's only going to be more to come. But we didn't get into Ryan O'Reilly. He spoke to the media after signing with the Predators in free agency. We are going to get into that, the things that he said, and some things that Nick Kieser did talking to him and his younger brother. We're going to get into that next. You're listening to Riddle and Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
In signing with Nashville, I guess, you know, considering you're a veteran player, and some people look at this team as maybe going towards you. What's
Well, I think the veteran players that are here right now, I think, are so, you know, the way they impact the game is so impressive. And then, you know, I think, too, watching last year in the youth and what they do, there's a great balance of both. And I think for me coming here, I think it's, you know, something that, you know, I look forward to. And I think we can take a step and be right there to competing for a cup.
Welcome back into Riddle and the Reporter. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studio. That was Ryan O'Reilly talking about how he signed with this Predators team because of the foundation of veterans, the young players, the prospects, the guys they're bringing in, and the vision of Barry Trotz. He truly feels as if, you know, at some point during the term of his contract, that he can find his way into putting this team into a Stanley Cup conversation. But before we get into that conversation, the Game Summer Ticket Tour is headed to Bringle Smoking Oasis, located at 4901 Centennial Boulevard, this upcoming Friday afternoon from 2 to 6. Come eat, drink, hang out, and leave with a pair of free Sounds, Preds, Big Machine, Music City Grand Prix tickets, or concert tickets. Also get signed up for the grand prize, Titans tickets, Preds tickets in the 501 Club, and a two-night stay at the Opryland Hotel with access to Sound Waves. Black Tie Moving delivers the Game Summer Ticket Tour. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/tour. Yesterday, great turnout.
I saw that. That looked like it was a lot of fun.
Let me tell you. It was a lot of fun because I was working the promo setup with handing out all the tickets.
Yes.
It was hype, dude. Like, people were super excited to
come see us. It's a nice building, too.
Oh, it was great. Like, it was a huge turnout. There was a ton of people there.
So, great shout out for that. That was an amazing event. And we're doing it again, too, soon,
yeah,
right?
That's what I was saying in the liner, that we're going to be at Bringles in same neck of the woods, but a couple blocks
heck
over.
Heck, yeah.
So, because the workers at Fat Bottom, since they were working the event, could not sign up. So, they were like, well, where are y'all going to be next week? We want to get in on these tickets. I mean, we had tickets to a lot of things. Guns N' Roses, Three Doors Down, Daniel Tosh, Queen. Mm-hmm. Like, there were so many big-time concerts we were just giving away tickets to.
Let me just say this about Bringle Smoking Oasis. I don't want to say I'm a regular, but I do go there quite often.
I'm a regular. You just said you're a regular.
Let me just put it this way. If you go, and just people listening, get the smoked pastrami. You will not go wrong.
Okay.
It melts in your mouth. It's unreal. I'm a big pastrami guy, so I haven't smoked pastrami yet.
Really? The Italian. You like pastrami?
I was about to say.
But I'm just saying, they're smoking at Smoking Oasis. It is unreal. It
there
is a different level.
All right, go. Yeah, head out to Bringles on Friday because we got a bunch of tickets. I mean, I'm talking like there was 30 people that walked away with
that's
a pair
awesome
of tickets.
Well, our local resident Italian here at 102.5 The Game has a glowing comment, so now I have to go. So
absolutely.
There you go.
So, all right. So, getting back into the Ryan O'Reilly, you said that you talked to him and his younger brother, Cal. So kind of get into that conversation, because I really like his mindset coming into this opportunity.
So, correction really quickly. Ryan is the younger brother. Cal is the older
brother.
But it's okay.
Okay, mix that up.
Now, if you look at maturity of the game, sure, maybe that. But talking to – so, Cal, just for some context here for our listeners, too, that maybe have forgotten, or if you're a loyal Preds fan, you might recognize Cal. Cal was drafted in 05 by the Predators in the fifth round, 150th overall. He was a very late bloomer coming in, but he was a very talented skater. He was a dynamic guy. That's what I heard from all of Cal's former teammates that I spoke to for a story on Nashville Hockey Now, and that was something that was very fun to do when you get to learn more about someone in a feature like that. You get to hear their voice. But anyway, but more of what I got out of Cal's conversation with me was he was so excited for his younger brother getting the opportunity to join him, but more or less excited as well for the fact that he can be a mentor and a really good player for the Predators. He feels like there is a good chance that he could be exactly what this team needs to take the right step forward. Henceforth, the press conference and the comments that he made. So I'm going to read a little bit of what I got out of my conversation with Ryan as far as one significant quote for me that I think is going to embody what he is going to be like here. He says, quote, "I look at myself and I still have a lot of ways to grow my game and get better. I think," he said, "I think young guys, that's something that they have to understand too. You have to keep getting better in all aspects, and I think that that's one of the reasons I'm here is to help teach, and that will help develop the way." And so for me, when I'm thinking about my main things with him is the character that he is. Keep in mind, too, he was the Conn Smythe winner during 2019 when the Blues won the Stanley Cup, and he was also part of their significant run. He wasn't their main captain yet. Alex Pietrangelo was still there, but Ryan was still an assistant.
Yeah.
And so he was part of this significant run, the first Stanley Cup. I mean, it was an electric time to be in St. Louis. But now that he's here, you have to remember what he has gone through. Barry said go to dark places, through different things. That's what Ryan's going to offer this franchise.
So tell me this, Nick. You know, he was a free agent. He was just with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they wanted him back.
Yes, they did.
There was also offers from the St. Louis Blues for him to go back there. So, you know, for a guy like that, who he doesn't have a lot of years left to be a main contributor, you know, he's kind of on the back nine of his career. Why do you think, I mean, do you genuinely think that he's right that this team could do a quick turnaround, because he had the options of going to play with
better
contributors?
Oh, he did. He absolutely did. I mean, look, that's exactly what he said. He feels like that there is another step that the franchise can take, and that's something that has to have been echoed to not just O'Reilly and Cal, but also it's been thrown out there to Nyquist, to Gerianov, to Shin, to all of these guys that they're bringing in, probably even their draft picks.
Here was my philosophy my thought process when he said that. I looked at his term of 4 years, and then I looked at Nyquist being at 3 years. Probably, you know, he could easily get moved off of.
He could.
Maybe after the first year, he could be one of those mid-season trade
like a Nita Ryder.
Yes. So I look at this as, you know, Luke Shen's on a two-year deal, and that they're slowly going to try and incorporate some of these young prospects to come in. And I think that the Predators have one of the better prospect pools in the NHL, and that he sees while he's still here, and I feel like he's going to be the one piece that's not going to get looked to trade. I think they're going to genuinely have him for 3 to 4 years of that deal. And I think that he sees it as, I'm going to be here and be a part of the transition, and I'm going to reap the benefits of it when it kind of reaches that pinnacle that Barry Trotz is trying to work towards.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect way just for us to look at it. And he also – and Cal knows with the young guys coming in here that is something that they need to have as their main focus, is working with these guys. And it was really cool to talk to some of those prospects at Dev Camp about, you know, what do you guys think of the additions? This was not usually an interview question for me. I would talk to them. And the fact that Cal you know, he's like, do you know anyone on the Admirals? Do you know anyone that's going to be coming in? Not that I know them personally, because I don't, but I also am telling him what this team was like last year, just to give him a short answer. But also, really quickly, let's go to Adam in Portland, who wants to weigh in. Adam, good morning. What's up?
Hey, man. Hey, number one, Ange Jabeur just got booed. I don't know if y'all have that on, looking at it.
Yes.
Sad. But no, man. Hey, I like that presser from Ryan O'Reilly, man. As a Preds fan, I don't want to sit here and think that I have to wait 5 years for them to be competitive again. Like, I think Barry Trotz is tough, and what we expect from him is to build a tough roster. I expected some turnover. I think he's probably done a lot more than maybe any of us could have guessed as far as how quickly he's turning things over. But the level of it doesn't really bother me at all, man. I think I know people are upset about – some people are upset about Duchesne, and just the money didn't really make sense to me. That's the only thing. Like, we're already eating so much money, so whatever. But the Johansson thing, we haven't really seen anything good from Johansson in, like, 3 years. He does one cool thing, and that's where he stops on a dime during shootouts. That's it. That's the one thing Joey does anymore. So we could act like, you know, he was something like a cornerstone, but he hasn't really been a pillar for us for a long time. So I don't mind the new guys coming in. I feel like Ryan O'Reilly is a huge upgrade over Johansson, especially compared to what we've had lately.
Yeah, for sure. Adam, before we let you go, I got a question. So as far as the timeline goes, would you be okay if the Predators were more or less at their peak of competitiveness by 2025?
I mean, it's 2023. That's too far out, man. Like, I like what he's saying. I just may be at the same time, man. I feel like Ryan O'Reilly, he's like, why can't we compete right now? Yeah, we can compete. Our division's not, like, crazy wildly good. It's not like the bubble division where we have the Hurricanes every other night. Like, I mean, this is a division we could probably be competitive in. So I would say, man, why not shoot for it this year or next year?
Yeah, for sure. Adam, thanks so much for weighing in.
I think he has a point. You
he
know?
Does, yeah.
Outside of Dallas and Colorado,
yeah,
in the division, like, I feel like that spot to be the third best team in the Central is wide open.
It is wide open, and I think that that's a really good thing. We could talk more about it on the other side if you want, but I think that's something that O'Reilly sees is you're bringing in a guy that has a high motor, not just a high motor, but I mean a guy that knows what it takes to get there. He knows the lengths that it takes. And so, look, I've stood by this for the last few weeks. This is going to be one of the best training camps I think that we will see in Nashville Predators history, if not the best one as far as competitiveness goes and where people are going to fit in. And also, too, just to give you some perspective on Riley, on O'Reilly down the middle, he had 499 faceoff wins last year, which only ranked behind Colton Sissons and Ryan Johansson. But the numbers are pretty close. You have 499 with Ryan, you have 593 with Colton Sissons, and you also have 502 with Ryan Johansson. So Colton Sissons, he's the perennial guy that will always be 60-70% most seasons, or at least 60 to 50 something. I mean, you just have a guy coming in that has a good 200-foot game. That's what matters.
All in all, I like where the Predators are going. They're going for culture fit. They're trying to get a combination of good veteran pieces along with the pillars that they have and the young prospects that are coming up. This year, and I said this to Caroline Fitton when I was filling in for Jared Stillman, I believe last Friday, was – this year is not a year for expectations for fans. This is a year to really look and gather and enjoy and cheer on the little things, the little movement, the guys taking small steps to becoming true NHL players and for this team to come together. And if everything goes into place, this team could easily be in contention for the playoffs come 2024.
Without any question, Junie. And I think that's exactly the way that fans need to look at it. And I think the aspiration of Adam is exactly right for fans to have at their best, I would say. But also have the expectation of, okay, the fans, you also want the young guys to play. Well, you're going to see what that looks like this season.
Root for the progression and root for the small victories in the Predator season. It's going to be interesting to see where this team starts and how they finish, because going forward for this franchise, it's going to mean a hell of a whole lot. But coming up next, the NCAA dropped the findings in the Jeremy Pruitt investigation with the University of Tennessee and their football program. We are going to get in the ramifications of that. And do we think the punishment was big enough? You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter.
The conversation is sparkling
on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Speaking of Tennessee, real quick, Pat Forty saying that the NCAA infractions committee will have their findings on Tennessee. We're closer to knowing what is exactly going to be their punishment. Do you think it's going to be a postseason ban, or is it more just going to be scholarships and recruiting?
I think it's going to be scholarships and recruiting, and I think that's what it should be. You know, to me, it's one thing to punish the staff of people who are there that, you know, none of them were there when all this went down, and that's tough enough. But when you punish the kid who had nothing to do with any of it, and to me, that's what a postseason ban is. So I'm hoping, I went to Tennessee. I'd say this about any school. I don't like punishing 19-year-olds for something that a bunch of 45-year-olds did 4 years earlier. And so I'm hoping, if you restrict what the staff can do and what the administration can do, you know, I think you probably should do that. But the reality is that you shouldn't keep these kids from ever playing a ball game. And so I don't believe that a postseason ban will be the case, but we're also talking about the NCAA. And every time I think I know, how the rules are enforced, that's usually not how that goes down.
That was Ryan McGee from ESPN coming on the Chase McCabe Show, talking about what he thought that the NCAA should do with Tennessee's football program. Welcome back into Riddle and the Reporter. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook live every day. Our streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Download their app and use the promo code THEGAME today. So, he came on the Chase McCabe Show the other day and basically laid out what was essentially going to happen. And then, soon enough, the NCAA came out and basically did exactly what Ryan McGee had told Chase that he thought should happen. And I gotta tell you, I agree with Ryan McGee.
Oh, yeah.
I hate it when teams get punished and programs get punished for past regimes of coaches that have no longer been there for years and players that are no longer with the program and have already moved on. Mm-hmm. I don't think that those punishments are just. So when it came out that the NCAA was going to put Tennessee's football program on a 5-year probation, a record-setting $8 million fine, and taking away scholarships, taking away official visits, and other small things like that, but not giving them the postseason ban, I feel like that was a win for the Tennessee football program. And because of Josh Heupel being in there now and running a smooth ship, from all accounts, I think that punishment was just.
Oh, yeah. And I think probation is still like a, I don't want to say derogatory term, but it's also just a, we're putting you on probation because you did a couple of things. And like Tennessee, they've been under the microscope of this for quite some time. And, you know, I've got a brother that goes to school there, so I've asked him questions about how he feels about the athletic department. And from what he's gathered with me and what he feels about it is just, look, and this is kind of more or less what I'm thinking of too, just based off my conversation with him, because he's been there for a lot of different events. And
yeah.
I think that they've been significantly better the last few years. And a lot of this is the ramifications from years past. And so that is something that they've had to figure out for a while. Heupel's in town now, and Jeremy Pruitt, you know, and all of that, the past regime, more or less, they've had themselves be judged for things that have happened. And they absolutely should, because they are wrong things. 200 things, $8 million is not something to just wink at.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, the McDonald's bag trend was going on for a while after Jeremy Pruitt.
I know.
And so here's what gets me, though. They are also taking away some of the records that you know
they
Tennessee
are.
Had. But
Adam Sparks is on it.
But honestly, is that really that big of a deal? Because Jeremy Pruitt was there from the 2018 to 2020 season. They only had one winning season in that entire tenure when they went 8-5, including a Gator Bowl win in 2019. But his entire record while he was there at Tennessee was 16-19 total. So he had a losing record, and his record in SEC play was 10-16. So, I mean, we're really not talking about anything crazy valuable. Now, what are some things that are going on with the program now? So this is something that's going to affect Tennessee going forward. 28 scholarships are going to be taken away throughout the 5 years.
Wow.
So that's one. 36 official visits will be taken away as well. And so that's going to affect the team going forward. Do you think that that's fair?
Oh, I think it is. And also, too, there's the other part of this, too, I want to just add on top of it with some great reporting from Adam Sparks with the Knox News up there.
Okay.
So he also throws in there that former UT assistant coaches and staff members also received multi-year show cause orders, which that means, and he states it here, is a show cause penalty means a university cannot hire a coach or recruiter without being subjected to penalties during the length of the ban unless the NCAA signs off. Pruitt's show cause includes a 100% suspension for the first year of employment should an NCAA school hire him in any athletics position, but this also goes toward any assistance, any recruiting that they currently have there too. So there's a lot of different things that they're going to have to hurdle over the next few years.
And that was interesting because, you know, Pruitt was up for the Alabama defensive coordinator position,
yeah,
and Nick Saban wound up going with somebody else because of the fact that he knew that something might have come down from the NCAA, basically prohibiting from Pruitt. So, I mean, basically, it's going to be tough for Jeremy Pruitt to find another position around in college football. He was most recently with the New York Giants, but got let go after, you know, the Joe Judge regime went down there. So he's been kind of unemployed. It's going to be rough for him to get another position. So, you know, it's going to be tough for Tennessee, especially with the direction that they are going towards. Because, you know, obviously they're trying to get the best recruits possible to compete with your Alabamas and Georgias. So it's going to be tough for them going forward. But coming up next in hour number two, we're going to get in the latest with DeAndre Hopkins. We're going to get into Jeremy Fowler's top 10 per position rankings and how some of the Titans players factored into that. We're also going to get Frazier in on the mix on some Nashville SC in the direction of their team. So hour number two coming up next here on Riddle and the Reporter. You're listening to us here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.